From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Bill Curtis, and here's your host at the Norse Auditorium in San Francisco, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you, everybody. Thanks, San Francisco. Listen, it is summer, finally. It's summer, and you know what that means.
NPR's annual staff nude beach retreat.
Well, okay, yes, that, among other things, but since we're going to need a week to scour that image from our brains, let's spend today listening back to interviews about our other favorite summer pastimes. A few years ago, we went to Boston to talk baseball, and naturally, in Boston, we called up Jim Boughton, who pitched for the New York Yankees. I started by asking him about his famous baseball memoir, Ball 4, and about the scandal it caused when it came out.
Well, there was a great deal of objection from two quarters. One was the sports writers, because they didn't have the access I had, and they had been sort of pushing, a milk and cookies, Boy Scout kind of view of players.
Right.
Also, the owners were against the book because Ball 4 was the first book to tell people how difficult it was to make a living in baseball.
Yeah, it was hard.
Minimum salary was $7,000. My average salary for 8 years in the major leagues was $19,000.
But did the other players get mad at you for telling tales out of the locker room, I guess?
Well, some of the guys did, but you got to understand, in those days, most guys who played professional baseball had, a little more than a high school education. These were not readers.
Right.
You know, unlike today. if you were on a bus, a team bus, going to some, airport or something like that, and you were reading a book, they called you the professor. these guys were innocents, and they were very vulnerable, and that's why they were able to take advantage of these guys.
Sure. So we're here in Boston this week. What is it like, since you've done it, to play at Fenway Park?
It's like pitching at the Roman Colosseum. At any moment. Fenway Park is a great place to play ball. I'm telling you, it's the only stadium where you can be on the mound and hear personal insults from the stand.
Really, they're that
right?
Close.
It's interactive.
It's great, and it starts way before the game. When the team bus pulls up to Fenway Park at 3 o'clock in the afternoon for a 7 o'clock game, there are 250 people hollering at you in a foreign language.
Right.
And that starts it off.
Really? So you're welcome and made to feel warm as soon as you show up.
Oh, yeah.
You realize that now that you've said that you can hear them, it's going to be worse.
Yeah. Now they
Everyone's
know.
Like, oh, they can hear.
I love pitching in Fenway Park. I thought it was a great experience.
You enjoyed it. Did you enjoy infuriating the crowd?
Well, my best one was, I don't know if you remember, when Dick Raditz, the monster, 6'8" guy, big guy, great relief pitcher. And he would come into the ninth inning and he would strike out the side, Mantle, Maris, and Tresh. And he would walk off the mound with his arms raised over his head. And he was the monster. And the crowd would roar. Well, on a Sunday, I pitched a shutout. And I decided that it would be a good idea to walk off the mound with my arms over my head.
Right.
I walked off like I was the monster, and all this food and beverage started coming. Hot dogs, beer cans. I was dodging food on my way to the dugout. And
as you get to the dugout, you get closer to the people throwing the food.
Yeah, right, right.
You have less time to react.
But there was shelter there, too,
Yeah, I know.
Underneath something. Frankie Crosetti said, "Are you crazy? Don't you know these people?
Don't you know where you are? They'll
right.
kill you." That's terrible.
Yeah.
One of the things in your book is you suggest that the coaches and managers have no idea what they're talking about. And have no effect. Is that true?
Well, at that time it was.
Right.
Today I don't know what impact the manager has or what impact the coaches have, because I'm really not close enough to the game. But back then, the manager was usually, some former player who everybody liked. And then he chose a coaching staff made up of basically his drinking buddies. So that was very unscientific.
Well, you have guys coming in and telling you to do one thing one day, and the next day they'd come in and they'd say, "Do something else." And you'd be like, "I have no, what?"
Yeah, well, they would say like, "Hey, what are you doing with that baseball? I was going to take it out inside and throw it." "No, put it back in the bag." the baseballs don't come out until later. You know, that kind of stuff. I wish I could say I was kidding.
If you were talking to a non-baseball fan, and believe it or not, there are some, how would you pitch the game? What excites you about the game?
What doesn't excite me about the game is the stepping out of the batter's box. What are you stepping out of the batter's box for?
You mean when people step out of the batter and delay the game?
After every pitch, guy steps out of the batter's box, he's got to fix the straps on his glove.
He's got to spit in his hand, depending.
All that. If they eliminated Velcro, it would knock 20 minutes off of every game. And I don't like guys hitting home runs and then raising their arms up like they just discovered a cure for cancer. Hey, look at me. I just hit a home run. In our day, you hit a home run, you put your head down, you ran around the bases, you went into the dugout, and you shut up. You know why?
You won.
Because it's just a home run.
Right.
It's not a religious experience.
You weren't much of a hitter, though. Did you ever hit one?
I never hit a home run.
Well, then how do you know?
All right, so maybe I would have raised my hand.
I'm just saying. God knows I would.
But I tell you what, if Bob Gibson were pitching today, they wouldn't be doing that.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you about. Because what was your feeling as a pitcher about the brushback pitch or the beanballs?
I never used it intentionally. Once in a while, a ball would get away from me. And, you know, I broke Wayne Causey's wrist. He was the best player on Kansas City, and I broke his wrist, and I felt very bad about it. As a matter of fact, they ran up the home plate to see how he was. And after the inning was over, one of my coaches said, "You don't run up there and ask how they feel. They're going to think, you know, that it was unintentional."
You want them to believe you.
That's
right. Yeah.
Right.
But you were a knuckleball pitcher. You had no idea where the ball was going anyway.
Yeah, that's true. Well, yeah, once I hurt my arm, then I had to resurrect this knuckleball.
Yeah. Was that difficult to...
Well, I had thrown it when I was a kid.
Yeah.
I learned it after reading the directions on the back of a cereal box. There was a picture of Dutch Leonard, and it explained that you throw it with your fingertips, not your knuckles, and the idea is to throw the ball without any spin. Well, if you go out and try to do that, it's almost impossible to do it. And I must have thrown about, over a course of 2 weeks, 500 attempted knuckleballs to my brother. And then finally, I accidentally threw one correctly. The ball went perfectly still, didn't move. My brother reached up to catch it, and just before it went into his glove, it broke down and hit him in the knee. And he was lying on the ground saying, "What a great pitch! What a great pitch!"
And did you want him to think it was intentional?
All right, Jim Boughton, we have asked you here to play a game we're calling
A Fistful of Greenies. That's nothing.
So you famously wrote about shenanigans in baseball, which have arguably gotten worse since then. But compared to other sports around the world, baseball players are hardly immoral at all. We're going to ask you three questions about people who really know how to cheat. Get two right, you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice in their home answering machine. Carl, who is Jim Boughton playing for?
Jim is playing for Margaret Brown of Hamilton, Massachusetts.
Ready to go?
I'm ready.
Here is your first question. First question. One of these was the biggest scandal of the Sydney Olympic Games of 2000. Was it A, the Spanish Paralympics basketball team, none of whose members were actually disabled? B, the Estonian sailing team, which used an outboard motor? Or C, a Finnish fencer who hit a taser in his glove?
Ooh. I like the Finnish fencer idea. Yeah. I like.
You're going to go with that?
I'm going with that.
You're going to go with that? Sadly, it was the Spanish Paralympics basketball team. The scam was revealed by a journalist who actually got onto the team, and after the Olympics and they won their gold medal, he revealed that nobody in the team was actually disabled. They were all faking. And once the report was published, they had to give up their gold medal.
Oh. See, I never read the sports section.
I understand. There's nothing there of any interest for any person. All right, you still have two more chances here. Jockey Sly Cormoosh, that's his real name, Sly Cormoosh, once used a heavy fog bank to win a horse race. How? A, he just stopped his horse, waited for the rest of the horses to come around the track, and then raced ahead of them to cross the finish line first. B, he got off his slow horse, rode around on a faster one, then jumped back on the slow one to win. Or C, he moved a fence that all the other horses got lost.
Whoa. I like the horse stopping.
He stopped his horse and waited for them to come around. That's what he did.
Yeah, okay.
Huge fog bank. Nobody could see him. So as soon as they get out of the gate, he just reined up, waited for them to come around, and then he just rode in ahead of them to win. Although he got greedy, he won by too much, so people started asking questions. Last question. This is good. If you get this one right, you'll win.
Like 2 out of 3?
You get 2 out of 3, you win.
All right.
Perhaps the most famous sporting scandal ever was the strange attack on Nancy Kerrigan right before the 1994 Winter Olympics.
Oh, yes, yes.
Remember this? Arranged by her rival, Tonya Harding.
Right.
Ms. Harding was banned from figure skating after that was all done, but her athletic career did not end. She went on to do what? A, have a stint as the third seat in a professional bobsledding team. B, fight Bill Clinton accuser Paula Jones in a celebrity boxing match. Or C, she founded a very short-lived new sport called crowbar fencing.
I know the answer to this.
I think it was the bobsledding thing.
You think it was bobsledding?
No, no, no.
Oh my
now
God,
I remember it was the boxing.
It was. You were right. They were right. Mel was right. She had a celebrity boxing match with Paula Jones, and as the boxing writers like to say, she stopped Ms. Jones in 3. So there you are. Carl, how did Jim Bouton do in our show?
Jim did well enough. 2 correct answers, Jim, so you win for Margaret Brown. Congratulations.
There you are. If you want to throw your hands up in victory, we really won't mind here.
This is a public radio home run.
Yes, exactly. Jim Bouton, thank you so much for being on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you.
Jim Bouton, ladies and gentlemen.